From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 15th, 2021. You're listening to the greatest PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I think our PokerCast probably beats other planets as well.
Probably true, yeah. We don't know that for sure yet.
We can't verify that.
Yeah, that British spacecraft is at Mercury now, right? British or French or Chinese or not American and not Bezos, Musk, or Branson.
No.
Did you watch William Shatner blast off in space yesterday?
I watched a clip of it, and I'm glad he's boldly going where no TV host or TV star has gone before.
I was flipping channels trying to find silver spoons, which we'll talk about next week.
Yeah,
about this week. But and then I said I saw the live Shatner live launch. I clicked on it, and it was like T-minus 3 minutes. I was like, perfect timing. I mean, not that it's all that exciting. It goes up and comes down, but you know, it's kind of like that model rocket you did when you were a kid, except you know, it actually goes to space. But whatever, you know.
I'm glad he's alive.
He made it.
Guy's 90 years old, and it's just amazing.
Yep. And he got out of that thing pretty good, too. Wobbled a little bit, but, you know, hey. I'd like to wobble out of bed at 90 if I'm lucky, so.
Ricky Schroeder went to school in my hometown at the exact same time I was going to high school. But he went to Choate, that famous, you know, prep school, which is, like, better than, like, 90% of all college campuses on the planet, too, by the way. I just went back home last week. That's why I couldn't do a show. And we drove through where Choate is, and you know, I don't live there anymore, but now, I mean, it just keeps expanding, so it's been years since I've been there, and it's, like, ridiculous. But he went to school at Choate the same time I went to school at my high school, and I never ran into him, though. All 4 years that he went to school, I never even saw him or heard, like, a rumor of where he was or anything. But, of course, now he's Rick Schroeder now, sorry.
Yeah, you would have got to ride the train and play the video games. That would have been a lot of fun. But that's next week's show. Don't get ahead of us.
Yeah, don't get ahead of us. Yeah,
let's. We're way behind on the Survivor stuff too. Is that we keep pushing stuff off like the old days when we actually had stuff to talk about.
All right, let's go.
All right, the World Series of Poker is off and running, so we've got a lot of updates because you were out of town last week, showing off at your college campus and weddings and all kinds of other fun stuff.
Yes.
All right, Jesse Klein has won event number 2, the 25K horse, despite having less than this event's buy-in and career tournament earnings, and facing a final table featuring Phil Helmuth with Matt Glantz and David Benningman. Ari Engel earned his second career bracelet by winning event number 9, the 10K Omaha 8 Championship. Jason Kuhn, who was on the short list of best players without a bracelet, as we talked about last show, right?
Right, yeah.
Won his first by taking down event number 11, the 25K Heads Up Championship. Kelly Minkin and Adam Hendricks caused a stir in event 15, the $1,500 six-handed no-limit hold'em. Minkin had registered and sat down. Before playing a hand, she asked the floor if she could unregister because she claimed a player at the table next to her had harassed her and stolen money from her. Later, she re-entered the event. Hendricks tweeted his disgust over it because the floor told him she would not be allowed to re-enter. He eventually tweeted out a correction but maintained this is a loophole WSOP brass should look into. Jason Manette won his fourth career bracelet in event number 16, 10K Limit Championship, beating famed political prognosticator Nate Silver Heads Up. I always like prognosticator. Usually only use that for the groundhog, but, you know. Anthony Zinno won his third career bracelet in event 19, the 10K Stud Championship, and Phil Helmuth, chasing his record 16th bracelet, made his fourth final table of the series. Helmuth made headlines in the event for something else, though, going on a 15-minute F-bomb-filled rant, where he said he'd burn the casino down if he didn't win the tournament. The Rio is still standing, by the way, though, folks. Helmuth got plenty of Twitter hate for the meltdown, as well as questions as to why he's not penalized for the language or the threat, whether meant in jest or not. My favorite tweet, Barney Boatman, I can dodge rulings! Baby part, though. It also apparently happened in the earshot of the Raise It Up event, which seeks to end abuse at poker tables. Can't replicate the irony in that.
Yeah, I was saying, can't make this stuff up.
Daniel Negreanu entered event number 20, the 1K flip and go 9 times. But wait for it, David Williams entered 19 times before advancing, Chris.
Jeez.
And Tom Hammers entered event number 22, the Women's Championship, with a buy-in of $10,000 and a plan to donate any winnings to charity. Despite his good intentions, Hammers received criticism for entering. Whew. All right, wow. So before we start, I'm going to let you talk because I've just talked forever there. But
well, let me say...
what I'm going to feel bad, though, real quick, though, I'm going to feel really bad is we're going to spend a lot of time talking about people doing bad things or potentially bad things at the expense of talking about all these people that had great accomplishments, and that bothers me, but we're still going to do it. So
yeah, well, I mean, it's remarkable. Helmuth is making all these deep runs. He's probably going to be player of the year if he takes one bracelet now.
And they're almost all in mixed games too, which he's always been his quote-unquote seal. So
yeah. I think he's trying to prove a point now, because I mean he's been hearing that for so long, and then he finally broke that, you know, sort of cycle last time or whatever, time before last. But a lot of interesting names on this list. I'm not sure what to make of the Kelly Minkin Adam Hendricks thing. Somebody has a problem with somebody at the table, I think they're allowed to leave, and then I can understand that it's one of those, well, if you don't like, you're sitting with a bunch of really good players and you want to try your luck with someone else, you unregister and re-register, and that's not right. But I don't know. I mean, it's sort of the, you know, you believe the abuser, the abusee first or whatever, you know, and the person who's been, you know, offended or harassed first, you know, and if she says it's true, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's an interesting...
It's a tough spot, right?
Tough spot, yeah, it really is.
And here's the thing is that, you know, we mentioned the Raise It Up event that was going on when Phil Hellmuth was lighting the match, but never got around to lighting the match, right? But that's really what we're talking about. I mean, this is the Women's Poker Association's. This is their signature thing that they do every year to really get casinos to sign on a zero-tolerance abuse pledge, which they say through their studies is the number one reason that more women don't play, is they feel intimidated at the table, not necessarily by the game, but by abusive players around them, right?
Right.
And I think any of us rational players endorse and sign on to that that thought. So so here's a situation where you have a woman who says, hey, I've been harassed by this person over here. So the compassionate thing, and what it would seem like the Raise It Up is trying to get to, is to allow that person not to be abused at the table and unregister and then re-register. The problem is then we know how humans are. I'm not even going to say poker players, but we know how poker players are too. But they're poker players are human, right?
Right.
Once you see an opening to do something, you exploit it. I mean, that's just human nature, right? Right. So. Now, if you sit down at a table and it's that mixed game final table with all these heavy hitters there, I mean, what's to stop you going to the floor? And I'm like, hey, Phil Hellmuth beat me. I took my milk money as a kid, man.
Yeah, right.
Let me unregister and then I'll re-register and I'll spin the wheel at getting a softer table. So I don't think there's a win here, unfortunately. And that's what I feel is really bad about this particular situation.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to, if you're someone who's been abused, then it's something that you have to think about. Am I going to enter an environment where the person who abused me or stole from me or whatever is going to be there? And if that's a chance that's going to happen, then you probably need to think about whether or not you're going to go there. So then people would say, well, you know, they have every right to be there, but, you know, it doesn't mean the other person doesn't have the right to be there. It's he said, she said at that point. Yeah. I don't know how you do win this. And I don't know if the, you know, if it falls on the person who is the one that's going to have the problem to make up their minds. In this case,
yeah,
you know, does Kelly have to say, hey, you know what, I this guy's here and I can't, or this person, I don't know if what this person was here. And I don't know if I can handle this or not. Maybe I shouldn't enter. Or at the same time, and if people say, well, she should have every right to enter. Okay, well, okay, but you're going to have to live up to the same situation as every other player in this tournament. I mean, okay, so you don't sit at that table, but you could literally break that table in an hour and be sitting with them again next time. Then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, ask for a table change or something?
Sit next to somebody that's abused you worse, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
So, I mean, here's one thing, and it's really hard to get a straight story on what happened here. There's all kinds of different versions. So I'm going to just take an assumption that she was not told that she had an option, right? Mm-hmm. She asked, hey, if I unregister, will I be able to register again? And she was told yes. What we don't know is if she would have been told no. Again, assuming this happens this way, right?
Right.
You know, because we all like options, right? You know, we go into the dealership and I'm like, can I get that car in red? And they're like, no, we only have it in black. Okay, I'll take the black, you know? But yeah. Or somebody might say, all right, fine, I'm going to walk out and go somewhere else, right? So you don't know what would happen there. So, and this is one of the reasons that we have rule number one in the TDA rules, right? So tournament directors can make a ruling that goes against something else for the betterment of the game. So it does come down to discretion here, and I don't know whether the floor knew Kelly. I don't know what went on. I mean, honestly, none of us know because there's so much misinformation. So many different versions out there, right?
Yeah.
So we don't know whether this floor might have known the history here and said, yeah, that's a good case. That's something that we'll make an exception for. I don't know, but you know, this is, and part of it was the big fight over Twitter and social media, which has always been a big thing I've whined about on the show, right? So, and one of my big problems with Twitter is that you can't edit, so you have to delete, or you leave it up. In this case, Adam sent a correction out, but even his correction, I think, still made the point that we're talking about. I'm like, is this something that should be allowed or not?
One of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking was, you know, when people have a restraining order, right? And what if like, let's say two popular poker pros got into a fight with each other and one of them said, you know, I can't handle this anymore, and they get a restraining order. So let's say Negreanu and Helmuth have restraining orders on each other or whatever.
That'd be awesome, by the way.
Right? Exactly. So what happens then? You know, you're not allowed to enter. You're allowed to be 500 feet away or something. So, okay, so you're in the same building, you're in the same tournament, but you have to now say this person cannot, you know, within the document or something, this person cannot willingly enter an event that this other person's in for the fear of them being together at a table someday. Or so, you know, it's like if that were to happen, if Kelly were to show up and say, I had this restraining order on this person who abused me and stole from me and everything, yeah, and you've placed me at their table, you have to unregister me and move me or something, then I think no one would care. But because they're taking her word over it, you know, then it's like some people are having a problem with it. And I don't know how you have a problem with it, but you know what? I mean, that's, you know, if it's something blatantly abusing the option or something, you know, but if it's a one-time thing, I think I can understand it. But again, you never know when they're going to use their one time, you know, as they say in poker. So,
well, I mean, here's where the problem comes in, and this goes back to the whole raise it up thing, right? I mean, there are people that tweeted that, I mean, there's one that said, what, there was some guy next to you at the table that you don't like? Well, that happens to me in every tournament, right?
Yeah.
Which is tone deaf to the situation, right?
Yeah.
Essentially saying, just man up and deal with this the way poker is, where the raise it up folks are trying to change poker so we don't have that problem, right? So that's where it gets really tricky, I think, on this. It's very simple for someone just to say man up. It's a little harder to actually solve the problem that is causing the particular issue. So I don't know. We'll see what happens going forward. But
okay. How about this Helmuth F-bomb tirade? Now, did he do any of this on Twitter? Because then would he win the first person to go on the Twitter rant? Or
that's right. Yeah. Well, one person said that, right? And it was supposed to be between Kessler and...
Oh, okay. Just those two. All right.
But somebody gave a pity vote to him, so yeah. But yeah, it wasn't on Twitter, but it was on
the floor.
Stream, so, and I watched, and somebody put together a 16-minute highlight, which is not just this hand, but all the other hands that he was a complete ass already in this series so far. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to that tweet. I mean, I laughed about it. I can dodge rulings, but I'm like, to me, that's one of the real big problems here is that he seemingly gets away with this stuff because of his celebrity.
Yeah, it's like the Jordan rules, except it's the Helmuth rules.
Yep.
You know, yep. There are certain things that these people, they do a lot for the game, and they don't like to be, you know, the people who are dealing with them don't want to be harassed by them, so they kind of look the other way, and it's not right. It's not right in any sense of the word, but they still do it. But
yeah, at the same point, nobody at the table asked for a floor. The dealer did not on his own ask for a floor. So, you know, there is some some level of responsibility there if the people at the table were felt threatened by it. And there's no indication that I saw that anybody there was. I mean, you had Jack McClellan, who has been a tournament director of the World Series for 10 years, sitting right next to him and calming him down with jokes, right? And then you had Anthony Zinno, who was the subject of this rant, went on a win and was effusive in his praise about how what a wonderful player Helmuth is in his winning interview, right? So it's quite possible that these people just say, oh, that's just Phil, and weren't worried about it. The problem with that attitude, though, is, again, we go back to this raise it up, right? So as long as you allow it and you say, oh, well, I'm not threatened by it, I don't care whether anybody else is threatened by it, which is what you're saying, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Then it continues. So I don't want to get into dealer bashing because there's a lot of that going on with the series right now. We knew going in that there weren't going to be enough dealers to run this properly, that there were going to be a lot of really new dealers. I mean, the number of my poker friends that have told me that they've sat down at tables and the dealer said, this is my first hand of poker outside of dealer school that I'm dealing, is staggering to me. Not surprisingly, but staggering.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine that they would put a break-in dealer at a TV table, but maybe they did. But there is a sense of responsibility for the dealer in this situation to be the heavy, right? And
yeah,
not just that the players are going to speak up and ask for a floor, but you know, dealers are allowed to ask for floors. They don't need to be waited. They don't need to wait for a player to ask them. And that should have been a situation. But then again, you're in the middle of a live stream at a feature table. So, you know, there should be a tournament director just hanging around right there, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that the whole thing falls on the World Series here. There's no excuse for this in any sense of the responsibility, because if you go to the dealer and the dealer's like, I'm new, I'm not how to deal with this. All right, fine. But you know that, one, Helmuth is, you know, poised to do stuff like this. No matter what, you know they're going to be on television or on stream or whatever. So it's on you to be over there. And we all know, we have it on tape here, we have it on whatever you want to call it, on video, that he's using language that is unacceptable at the World Series. And plus the abuse on top of it. And it's unacceptable that they stood for this or let this happen. And it's such a high-profile event, too, a 10K stud championship where you know the whole world's watching. It's just unacceptable.
Yeah. I'm furiously writing down notes so I don't forget here, because I've got a lot more to say here.
Okay.
So a couple things. First, as he always is, he's NASCAR'd up, right? So he's got the Aria sweatshirt on. He's got some Bitcoin thing on his hat.
Yeah.
At some point, I think the sponsors need to step in and say, hey, you're not a good – this is not our image.
Right.
Or bitcom.com or whatever it was on his hat, right? And that hasn't happened. So I'd be interested to see if that's going to happen, because that seems to be what's going on now, is, you know, call it wokeism if you want. But, you know, the people that are paying money to represent your brand are being very brand conscious now. So it's a little different in the poker world, I know, but that would be interesting. The next thing I want to say is, now granted, Phil Helmuth is on a poker level that I will never see in any lifetime, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he's seeing things, well, he's not maybe, certainly seeing things differently than I am. But in this particular hand, he had split queens from the beginning. And that's what his hand ended up being, right?
Right.
It's not a strong stud hand. It's not a strong any hand, right?
Right, right.
And so the fact that, you know, this guy just started with three diamonds, I mean, how many poker players fold three diamonds?
Right.
Not the bat, right? So
right.
That seemed a little odd to me that he seemed to think this guy got lucky. And let's be honest, Anthony Zinno is not a rookie. I mean, this is his third bracelet, and he's won a crap ton of money elsewhere, too, right?
Yeah, I think he was even on our cover once.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Borgata event.
Like a Borgata, exactly.
So I think that's a little ridiculous to, you know, it's a different story if you've five cars in a row, you've got a straight and somebody's hanging on with a bunch of junk and then, you know, runner into a flush.
Right.
Different story, right?
Right.
This doesn't make sense to me. But, and that leads into my third thing. I mean, when I watched it today, I mean, it didn't look like a normal, sudden rage Helmuth rant like we've seen before, right?
Uh-huh.
it really did seem like he's just playing it up for the camera. And because, I mean, it was F-bombs here and there, and yeah, he threw the cards down and they slid off the table. But other than that, it was a very measured rant. All of these that I watched this morning, all in the same clip, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's reasonable to ask whether he's doing this to keep up his poker brat persona.
Yeah, I've always thought that's what that was from the day one when we've seen him. I mean, you still are kind of insulted by it, you know what I mean? But you don't, I don't know, it's hard to put in words, but the problem is that you start to say, how far do you take it, you know, when you see stuff like this, even though if he's not dropping the F-bombs, then you're like, okay, you know, whatever, he's just being a jerk. But he's breaking rules now on top of it. And I know it gets back to the raise it up stuff too with the abuse, but he's always been this way. And, you know, a lot of people, they always defend him and say, oh, he's, you know, he's a pussycat outside of the you know, but it doesn't matter. That's not what you're doing. You're not playing against the person outside of the casino. You're playing him in the casino. This is what he's like all the time. And I mean, of course, here we are talking about him, you know what I mean, which is what he wants, and it's what his brand wants. And so, you know, I there's no way to get around it unless you're just going to never report on him ever again, you know, and they're not going to do that.
Well, and he seemed to take some issue with people calling him an ambassador of poker, and I'm going to take issue with him taking issue with that, because when you've made this much money, not just at the table, but in endorsements, you know, he's on every TV show. You know, he's playing up the fame a lot out of this, right?
Right.
You know, you do have some responsibility there. You don't have to be the 1 million for one drop representative and donate your money. Barry Greenstein, donate your winnings to charity. You don't have to go that far, right? But I think you do have to acknowledge that you are a face of poker, whether you want to be or not, because of what you're doing. I mean, I think it's a different story if you just go play poker. You don't take any endorsement money. You don't get on TV. You don't create a persona like you're a pro wrestler. Those people I'll give a little bit of a pass to, because you're not trying to be ambassador. You're trying to win poker games. This guy is trying to be ambassador, and then when it goes back in his face, he gets upset about it and says, "I'm not an ambassador."
Right.
I find a problem with that too.
Yeah, so. I do too.
So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we're only a fifth of the way through the series here, so. We'll see both how well he does playing and how well he does controlling his 57-year-old temper, too. That's the other thing, too. I mean, at some point, when do you get ridiculous being out there? But all right, so we got two more things to talk about before we move on to Survivor. So the Flip and Go. So we talked about this last week about whether you could re-enter or not, and I was like, no, there's no way because you flip and go. But I didn't realize since they have flights, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So they had all-day flights, so as long as, you know, you can fire off these bullets. So, So
David Lant, there was at least 19 flights?
I think it was really confusing to me. So they had different flights, but then you could also re-enter the flights. So, I mean, again, so the way they worked it is the people that advanced came back at 7 o'clock that night. And I don't know when it started in the morning, 10 a.m., 11 a.m., whatever. So, you know, when you think about flights, it's not like you're moving on. I mean, they had a couple different buy-in times, I think. But, I mean, really, it's a single table satellite at this point, right? You know, you register, you do a flip and go. If you advance on, take your name, and you come back at 7 o'clock with 160,000 chips, and you play a tournament. So that makes a lot of sense in the sense of, you know, how you're going to get entries in this. And you knew there were going to be some of these degens that would fire. I mean, that's $19,000. The min cash in this tournament, by the way, was $2,000.
Jeez.
So, I mean, at 19 times, you had to go really far in this tournament to recoup that that money. Even 9 times, like Dan O'Neill, you had to go pretty far in the tournament to get that money back. So I think it just proved what we kind of talked about on the show. I mean, the degenerate. Now, I made the point that if you're a pro, you would be willing to put this $1,000 down, flip. If you didn't make it, then you could go on and do something else. What I didn't really acknowledge at the time was, no, these people are just degens and got $1,000 bills in their wallet like I have dimes. Just keep throwing them on the table because they just want to advance.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know anything about the procedure of this event? Because did they literally set up all these tables and have someone actually deal out cards for this crap, or did they just do some sort of electronic thing that...
There's no cards. I saw pictures of them. I mean, it was actual... They dealt the three cards, and then you obviously had to choose which one to discard.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They should have done this differently. They should have done it with, like, just a computer or something where you could just sort of like, okay, the first 10 entered, here we go.
You know. Now you can use Gaming Commission rules and stuff.
I know.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not kosher, but...
Well, you know how they do the online thing, and then they have them do the final table in person? That's what they should do. So you're not wasting all of these damn dealers and all these, you know, all these tables and everything.
Wouldn't you feel like you got cheated out of the rush of this tournament? Again, we talked about this last week. This is not a tournament for everyone, right?
Yeah.
But if you're entering this, I think the reason you enter it is that rush of getting those three cards, the squeeze. When am I going to fold? Waiting for the dealer to put them out. And I'm sure they didn't fire out the flop, turn, and river. They did it dramatically like they do at the final tables, right? So I think that's what you're paying for here. I mean, at least some of that $1,000. For me, part of that $1,000 would be the pageant.
Of
how they do it. So, but I don't know.
And this other guy, this Tom Hammer's guy, the women's event thing. I mean, seriously, why? If you're going to donate your winnings to charity, then just enter a $1,000 event and give $9,000 to charity.
Well, and someone said just give $10,000 to a women's charity, and they said you probably would still make it on TV, because that's kind of the assumption, is that this guy, this is, you know, he wants some recognition for what he's doing. And there's no indication that this guy is not a nice guy, right? I just, again, it's tone deaf.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, as long as I give my money to the charity, it's all good. Well, no, that's the whole point of this, is that it's supposed to be a women's event, and the women want to have their own event, just like the seniors' event and that. And when you enter, even if you're a nice guy, you're causing people to be uncomfortable at the table, because that's not the event they signed up for.
Has anyone ever tried to enter the senior event who's younger than the age?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Right? I mean, and how can you stop them from entering?
I'm guessing not, because you don't get the recognition. I mean, the notoriety, right? I mean, it's different when you're a guy sitting at a table with women, and than if you just have to be a 20-year-old punk and with a bunch of 50-year-olds, 70-year-olds. So I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, there shouldn't be anything that would really necessarily stop that, as far as I know. But again, yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to give this guy the benefit of the doubt that he did this with the best of intentions. I just wish he would have, like, focus grouped it with some other folks. And
they're
like, hey, great idea. Don't do it. Do something else. So I don't know. We'll see. And I'm sure the women's championship ended yesterday. I just didn't update today. So we'll talk about that more next week. But
okay, cool.
We'll see. All right, so we've been teasing this Survivor talk for a couple weeks, and then our good buddy David Bloomberg, who is who's been a longtime Antiup fan and hosts this Why X Lost Survivor podcast forever. I binged our shows waiting to see the episode, hear the episode that we talked about. I'm like, you have to tune in. You have to watch one more. So, real quickly, if you're not a Survivor fan, trust me, I'm going to try not to bore you here, because this is really, I'm talking about this not because I'm a Survivor fan, but because I'm a poker fan. And I really think, and I think you probably agree too, Chris, that there's a lot of parallels between poker and Survivor. Mm. They're both games of imperfect information where a skilled player has an expectation of doing better.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
In fact, I used to play, like, you know, follow the queen in baseball for dimes with some buddies before we got involved in this. But Survivor, I was a Survivor fan more earlier than I was a poker fan.
Wow.
You know, I didn't really become a poker fan until I met you guys at the times, and we, you know, started having the home game, and then we done about the podcast, and Survivor's been on for 21 years now, right?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, I think that's one of the lines I'm taking here, is that because I was such a fan of Survivor, it was really easy for me to get into poker, because there have been fewer than 600 people that have gotten the honor of playing the American version of Survivor. There's all kinds of other ones, right? But the American version, and it's really hard. I mean, you can't just sign up for Survivor, right? So, but I can go to my local poker room and I can play poker, and I think it's very similar, except you get to eat food. Well, not now, but you still eat food. So here's where my rant was. This year, the host, Jeff Prost, who really kind of took over as showrunner a couple years ago and is really trying to mold this thing in his own vision, right? Really wanted to shake it up after being off the air for COVID. Apparently came up with a very complex idea. One of the former contestants, he asked him about it, and that contestant said, that's great, but it's not going to be fun. And he's like, whoa, okay. So he threw that all out and then created this new version that's supposedly fun. My problem is that it's now, in my opinion, it's crossed the line from being a game where there's more skill to a game and now that there's more luck. And that's a fundamental change that makes it less exciting for me.
Well, so what you're contesting is that now with the extra added things, it's too much luck. Whereas before there was luck, but overall it was more skill.
Yep. Just like poker, I'm like, you know, you can make the best decisions, but you can't control what that river card is, right? So, right. And that's what's exciting because anybody can win. Granted, if you are very skilled, you're going to win more often, but there's still that element of chance. And you need that element of chance to make it interesting, right? I mean, I play backgammon on my phone all day long, but it's a solved game, right? Yeah. I mean, there's some luck in what you roll, but other than that, it's not that exciting. So I really don't know why I play it as much. but you want that luck element. You just want, I think as a skilled player, you want your skill to matter, right?
Yeah, you want it to win out over all of the other lucky options that are available to the rest of the players if you're better than they are.
And so the poker tie is the way I kind of explained to David Bloomberg was, let's take Hold'em, right, which I think we all agree is really the quintessential poker game, right? Yep. Even though you may prefer other versions of poker, but it's the quintessential one. And there are variations of it now, but, you know, Texas Hold'em is still the gold standard. So if they just all of a sudden decided that they're going to peel off three more cards after the river with no betting rounds, right? So right. You bet up and down the river, and then you're done, and then you turn your cards over, and then bam, 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 three more cards. And not like a run it twice thing, but just three more cards.
Right.
That's kind of how I feel like it is on Survivor now. They've added all these new twists and things, and it's taken the skill out of it because now if you get unlucky and you get one of these disadvantages, I call them, because they're not really advantages. No one's getting anything good out of this crap because the way they did it, you could be drummed out of this game without actually getting played.
Well, I think I felt this way back when they started having these hidden immunity idols.
Right.
Once that started, then I felt the way you did. But once that started, now it's not the same game anymore. And no matter how much luck, because even when they did it back then, you'd be like, okay, the guy found a hidden immunity idol and that was it. Then they started hiding them again. Yep. Like if the guy used it or if they got voted off the show within their pocket. And then it's like, okay, now you're immune. You got another chance at immunity. And then, you know, like the original Survivors, which I never saw, but I've heard about them. And Jean watched all the original shows, so she's told me a little bit about them. You know, the original ones were so much more true to survivorship.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You barely ate at all, and they didn't give you anything. There weren't even reward challenges. And it was just, you go out there and, right? So the fact that there's a chance that you can get a steak dinner, you know, on an island where you're supposed to be surviving, you know, to me is the whole luck thing anyway. And yeah, there's some skill in winning the challenge. And I agree with that. I liken this now to the draw games of poker where there's a joker involved.
Yeah.
And you're contesting, I think, that they've added four jokers to the deck rather than just being two or one.
I mean, so you're right. There's been an evolution of the game. And there has to be. Again, this is a TV show. This is not something else, right? So the very first season, it was just, let's throw these people on an island and let them fight it out, lure to the flies, right? And then you realize, well, we got to juice it up a little bit, so let's throw an idol out there. And then, oh, and now what if we hide the idol? And so it evolved. It needs to evolve. So I'm not against it evolving. What I'm against, though, is that the things now are punishing. So, yeah, somebody gets something or finds an idol. All right, great. You know, that there's some skill involved in that, and now their game is elevated because of that. What I'm saying now is these things are de-escalating your game. They are imprisoning you, so you can't do anything. I mean, all these things are taking your vote away, and you're not allowed to vote anymore. And so, yeah, there's still skill in how you try to adjust to that, but, I mean, you're really strapped to a pole with an executioner there, and like, oh, yeah, well, a skilled person will be able to uncuff themselves and run away like Rambo. But let's be realistic. That's not going to happen, right? So if it was less punishing, I would have a different opinion. I mean, even looking in the variations of poker that we've had, I'm like, you know, Omaha is a variation of all of them, right? Pineapple,
yeah.
Short Deck, which I still haven't played yet. They're all variations, but they don't change the fundamental part of the game. They don't add punishments where you're stuck. I mean, right? I mean, it's not like you draw a card and it says you're done with the hand. You know, that no one's coming up with that kind of poker, right? You're always able to play, and I just don't think that you're able to play the way you should play now.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you this: what was the thing that put you over? Like, what was the, like, it was it the die that they rolled the die possibility in the voting?
No one's done that yet, so I don't mind that at all. I actually think that's kind of cool. That's very poker like, right? So that's an opportunity when you have no way of winning to give you a sweat, right? I'm like, think about it in poker. I'm like, when you get it all in and you realize that the guy has a straight and you have no way of, I mean, you're dead, right?
Right.
How deflating that is. Now it's great on the other side. You're the one that's great, but it's deflating, right? And particularly from a viewership standpoint, and then again, Survivor is a game for people to watch. That gives you like a little bit of a sweat. So I'm fine with that. For me, it's the, oh, you found an advantage, but beware, there's a danger to it. And my argument with David, and I think he's finally coming around with it now, is that who on earth is not going to open that, right? I mean, you're not going to like, oh, I don't know what the risk is, so I'm not going to – that's not the way it works. So you're going to open it, and now the risk is that you don't have a vote until two other people say some nonsensical crap, and so you're trapped. And you can't give it back. You can't be like, okay, all right, now that I know what it is, that's pretty bad, so I'm going to give it back and take a different punishment. It's imprisoning people, and I don't think you should be imprisoned. I think advantages should be advantages.
Well, to quote Annie Duke, you can always fold. And that's the thing, though. So that's the skill right there.
You were stuck with that after you open it.
Right, but that's what I mean, though. You pick it up, you found it. It says beware. It says beware. So it's not like this is going to be great for you. It's beware. It could suck. It's kind of like the do you want to open the door, and then you get a chance to open the other two doors, and of course you take that chance.
You never assume that punishment is going to be that you can't vote. I mean, that is just so.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Beware is its own word. It's its own definition. Beware. You know.
You can go off on your own island with your steak dinner. You guys are crazy. All right, we talked enough about that. I'm looking forward to it. Survivor, but anyhow, it's a great show still, and definitely check out David's podcast, so Why X Lost. It's very good. So
okay, cool.
All right, and this is the week's update on poker room reopenings in Massachusetts. MGM Springfield will finally reopen its poker room on October 29th. I hear lots of cheers I hear from our Massachusetts.
I drove right by that building while I was in Connecticut because we went to Massachusetts to visit family members, and I saw it. It's nice.
In Wisconsin, St. Croix Casino Turtle Lake has reopened its poker room. In California, Club One Casino has reopened in a new location. That gets us to 282 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And we're going to go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen for all those details. And email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com to help us fix something. And sign up for our weekly e-blast so you get every Thursday an update on Sue still open.
All right, Anti-Updates. Papes, the Anti-Up fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines. with a main tournament followed by a second chance event, PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans Group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask Call the Floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or a call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move today. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $2, $5, No Limit Hold'em casino cash game. This is a typical 2-5 game with a lot of players here who think they are better than they are. The game is 8-handed. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, the +1 and MP fold. The hijack raises to $20, which is a standard raise. This player is tight and aggressive, but doesn't know when to pump the brakes. He's up 150 and sits with around 1150. The cutoff folds, and we're on the button with around 750, down 250, and the ace of spades, 10 of spades. I like this hand, but looking back, I think this is a raise or fold situation. The hijack could be trying to steal, but that goes against his style a bit. We ultimately decide to call. The small blind, big blind, and under the gun all fold. There's roughly $50 in the pot, and the flop is the queen of clubs, 10 of hearts, 10 of diamonds. The hijack leads out for $35. This is a great flop. We are only losing to queen-queen and queen-10, and I don't think this player would have raised with queen-10. We're beating almost his entire range. I'm not too concerned with much, so we decide to slow play and let him hang himself. We call. There's now 120 in the pot, and the turn is the queen of diamonds. The hijack leads again for 100. Okay, not the greatest card. We are now losing to queen-queen, ace-queen, and king-queen, but we're still ahead of aces, kings, jacks, and ace-king, as well as other pairs. I don't want to raise, but I think I can make another call. There's now 320 in the pot, and the river is the 9 of clubs. Our opponent now leads out for 300. So, if we call and lose, that leaves us with 300, down big on the night. If we call and win, we're in the positive for the night. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Paul Phillips is our Hand of the Week submitter this week.
Cool.
And he says he's listened to every episode on iTunes, so definitely appreciate that loyalty.
Wow.
All right, so he says he's playing a local card room where he's a regular and knows most of the players. He says, I'm considered a tight, aggressive player. It's 1-2 no limit hold'em, but it plays like 2-5 with typical openings between 15 and 20. Wow, I can't imagine sitting down a 1-2 game where the opening raises are 15-20.
Well, the 15 I've seen. I've seen that often. The 20, not really.
Wow. I remember there was a game that Fast and I were playing somewhere in Vegas, and there was a kid that was raising the 22 every single hand. And it threw us all off our game, and then eventually the kid went broke, which is usually what happens. But
yeah.
That was an anomaly, but I can't imagine being a game where everybody opening like that. But yeah, all right. He says, I'm in the small blind with $337. He says, I'm on my third $300 bullet due to a couple of massive suckouts earlier. Probably somebody drew rocks and did the die thing. And he says the big blind folds out of turn to use the restroom. That's rude. You can't do that, sir.
Dang.
Gotta hold it. He says a middle position player, a maniac with $285 limps. Another middle position player who is described as loose, aggressive, and co-owner of the card room with $1,100 stack and who enjoys pushing people around, also limps. And the cutoff is a calling station with a $190 stack that will see every flop. VPIP is nearly 100%. He also limps. And now we're in the small blind with a king of diamonds, eight of diamonds.
I'll limp. right? I'll look for the miracle flop.
Yeah, I mean, the action's cut off because the guy went to Wee Wee. So, you know, we're not going to get raised here, right? So yeah,
might as well limp.
Holler, and we'll see what happens. But again, this is what we always say, right? It's, you know, be careful what you're looking for here. Not looking for kings here. We're looking for diamonds.
Yeah, we're looking for diamonds.
All right, pot's $10. The flop comes the ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, tray of spades, and we are first to act.
Oh, I'm not doing anything. I mean, I love that ace of diamonds. That's great. But I'm not betting out and then losing my opportunity to get a fourth diamond on the turn and then get interested. You know, there's no way.
Or an eight, right?
Yeah, I mean, I hit the eight too. So maybe a king or an eight on the turn. So, yeah. But I'm not betting it.
Yeah, I'm not poking the bear at all. Yeah, we're hoping for one more card here that firms up our hand a little bit.
Exactly.
So. All right. Our hero checks and does check around, so the pot's still $10. Turn is the seven of diamonds, so our board now is ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, tray of spades, seven of diamonds, and again, we are first to act.
Well, it's safe to bet now. Nobody else bet, so if somebody had an ace, they probably would have bet, and especially when he described the players as maniacs and loose aggressive, if they're not betting that flop, they either really hammered it, or they missed it, and they're not really a maniac or loose aggressive. I'm not really sure, but in this case, I'm happy to bet. If somebody wants to raise it, I think I'd still call that. So, I don't know. I guess I'd bet pot.
Yeah, I think pot's the right bet. I think you have to bet here. I mean, now we've got our diamond draw. We still got that eight out there. We got a lot of ways we can improve here.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, no one took interest in this hand. At this point, I really think a king or, well, maybe not a king, but an eight certainly wins this for us, as well as diamond. It's hard to imagine somebody has two pair with how this looks, but you know, everybody limps, so we don't really know, but we definitely got to find out now. We can't wait for one more card.
Yeah.
Plus, remember, you got to build some value here too. So we bet $10 if everybody calls and then we hit our diamond on the river. If we didn't bet, you know, we're not going to get much action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of our way to build a pot here. So.
Yep.
All right, our hero bets 15, which, you know, it's interesting when we said pot because that's really the max you usually want to bet. But $10 seems a little low for a game where people open for 15, 20.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not opposed to the 15, I guess. Middle position plus one call. The cutoff min raises to $30, and it's back to us.
I'm still calling because I'm not calling on the strength of my eight. I'm calling on the strength of the potential here. And for a min raise, I've got the right odds to do this. And since the other ones just called, it's less likely that they're going to now come after us and pop it again or something. So I think we can get away with just calling for 15 more. It's going to be a ton of money in that pot. It's going to be totally worth the odds.
Yeah, it's built. It's succeeded here as long as nobody raises again, which I think you are correct that that's not going to happen. We've succeeded in building a really nice pot. We went from $10 to a lot of money. And if we hit that diamond or that eight, we're going to be very excited now. So.
Yeah.
All right, so that's what our hero does, too. Pot's now ballooned to 130.
Because everyone else called?
Yes, I'm sorry. Everybody else calls. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let's keep your head there. Yep. Pot's at 130. River's the four of diamonds. So our final board is ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, tray of spades, seven of diamonds, four of diamonds. Ricky Tiki Tavi. We are first act.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So for people to call there, they might be on a draw too, which might be interesting. They might have a lower flush than us, a worse flush than us. So that'd be really cool. The person who min raised, if I remember correctly, that was the cutoff. So the cutoff was a calling station. So there's no guarantee that that person's going to bet for us, but they did raise. And what's to raise there? If they didn't hit the ace, then did they slow play a set? Which would be great, because then you know they're probably going to bet. But they might be scared of that diamond. So I don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
We got two in this hand for you not to think that's at least one person was hanging around for diamonds. So
I feel like I don't know. It's weird. If some of those people were hanging around to make a flush too, it'd be a great check. And if the person had a set and didn't really pick up on the diamonds, it'd be a great check. But in this case, I don't know if I can rely on that. I mean, the seven came, so somebody could have had 9-10 and got checked around. So on the flop. So, I mean, they could be on a straight draw, and that's why they missed. You know, so yeah. They're not going to bet for you. They don't necessarily have to have a diamond draw for all these calls. Right. So I think I'm going to have to bet here, which is going to suck if we have the – obviously we have the nuts if someone, you know, folds that might have bet if we had checked. But you can't really think that way. You got to get your value now.
Got to bet. And here's the problem with it. I mean, you just have to acknowledge that you're in the small blind, and that just sucks, right?
Yeah, it
sucks. You're out of position when you let people catch up to you, and then you're at this mercy here where you have to bet. Because you have to bet because – if you don't, it checks around, you're not going to get any money. You've got somebody who was at least interested enough in the turn to raise. And then you've had a bunch of other callers, which you're right. One of them could be a straight draw, but I would put money on somebody else as a flush draw out there. So, but also remember that people see that last diamond and they acknowledge that the flush got there. How many times do people still make that crying call?
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh, I can't put that diamond got there. All right, I got to see it.
Yeah.
The famous, I got to see it, right? So just because you bet here doesn't mean that you're going to drive everybody out. So I think the way to maximize value here is to bet. Now, the question is how much. I'm thinking maybe half pot. Maybe.
Well, I don't know. When we used to analyze back in the beginning days of our show, and even if it was ABC Poker, you know, you'd look at the little green book of poker that Phil Gordon did.
Yeah.
He used to always tell you that, you know, on the flop, you're going to want to bet about 2/3 of the pot because the pot's smaller, but you want to get enough money out there to discourage things. Then on that turn, he would say about half. On the river, he would say about 1/3, unless you're making some grand play to try to confuse somebody. So if I'm looking for a value bet here and I'm looking for the right amount to bet to get a call in the end, I'm thinking like 40 or 50. You know, half the pot, it seems like 65, 70, and that's might be too much if somebody's got one pair. But if you bet 40 or 50, you might get two calls, you know, or you might get somebody who's willing to try to bluff and raise or whatever. So if I bet too much, you know, I might not get that extra call. I'm trying to get the most value out of this hand. And with so many people in the hand, I might get two calls for 40, but I might get zero calls for 70 or 80. So, you know, I don't know. I would probably bet 40 or 50 if I were to bet out here and hope I get at least two calls, or somebody who raised earlier that cutoff, now they make it 150 after I get another call in between or something. Now I'm making a lot of money. So I don't know. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty here is you've got, what, three other people in this hand, right? So what's the better play, to get three callers at a smaller amount or get one caller at a bigger amount?
Yeah.
And if you're up against the queen flush here, I mean, you could bet. It'd be better for you to bet the pot here and let them think that you're betting so big because you got a smaller flush.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that if you're one of these other players and you have the queen flush and someone now bets out who hasn't really done anything the entire hand and bets pot size when the flush gets there, you got to think that your queen is probably good, right?
Yeah.
If this person has a 10 high flush or something like that. So there is that argument too. And I think with three people in this hand, that might be the way to go now that I think. Plus, you also have this cutoff that raised before. Now, you know, again, they might be scared off by the diamonds, but I think you got some potential here to get one or two callers and maybe even a raise with a bigger bet. So I know probably the book probably tells you to go with a smaller, like a third of the pot kind of bet here. But the more I'm talking about it, the more I'm thinking like $100 or something.
All right. Well, I'm going to stick with 40. You're going to go 100. 40 or 50.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Our hero says, believing one of the two, the middle position, mid position one player would bet, I check, planning on check raising. Middle position player bets 100. The next player snap calls. Cutoff thinks for 20 to 30 seconds and calls.
Oh, my. Wow.
All right, I guess we don't know what we're doing because that's the best case scenario here.
Wow.
We have the nuts, and now we've just added $300 to the pot, plus we get the raise here.
Wow, that's insane. Jeez, it's got to be multiple flushes in a set. Then what else could it be? No one's going to call a top two here or something.
No.
Wow.
And even the set is a hardcore call there for $100. I mean, when I was saying I was going to bet $100, I was assuming that somebody had the flush. I wasn't expecting a set was going to call $100 there.
Wow. And 5-6 is possible, but how did 5-6 get there? So
true too,
you know what I mean? How did they even get to that point? But wow. Okay, well, I'm just shoving now. We only started with like 3-something, so.
Yeah, we have 3:05 left.
All right, I'm shoving.
Yeah, I mean, so I wonder now whether you're going to get a call or not. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter at this point. This is a massive pot for King 8, right, that we got there. So even if nobody else calls, but I guess there might be a point of raising less than that. I mean, I don't know how you do it now because the pot's now at 4:30 and, right, 4:30?
Yeah, because 300 onto it, yeah.
4:30 and you only got 3:05 left. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you got to shove, but be interesting to see what happens.
Well, okay, so the call would be 100. So you'd be raising it to 200. So you're asking someone else to call another 200. If you get one call out of it, then it's this, because by shoving, then it's the same as making it 100 and getting three calls, you get 300. So maybe you make it a min raise to, but I don't know, maybe the min raise would scare people. I don't know. But maybe you make it a min raise, you know, and get 2-3 callers for 100 more than the shove, which now 200, they're going to obviously think you have it. But if you, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's hard to decide.
No, that's a good math problem to have. So we've got three opponents, right? So if we raise all in 3:05, we need one of them to call to equal the same if we bet 100 and got all of them to call. I can't imagine all three calling that extra 100. I know it sounds crazy because it's only an extra 100. But if you were sitting here on a set and then now somebody re-raises, there's absolutely zero expectation that you can win now, right? You have to fold unless you're really stupid, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether there's a chance here that you're going to get all three callers for 100. I do think there's a good chance that you'll get one caller at 3:05, though.
Yeah, if you get one caller at 3:05, you're making 200 more. But if you get all three callers at 100 more, you're getting 300. So you get more money.
See more money, right?
Yeah. You get more money by making it a min raise.
I think a better chance of getting that money, too. Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, maybe, I think a raise has got to be – I mean, the all-in is the best play here.
The all-in's the best play?
I think so.
Yeah, because you think the odds of all three calling 100 are less than getting one caller for – right?
If I get a caller, I'm still making 5x
dollars. All right. Let's shove.
Yeah. All right, that's what our hero does. Middle position player snap calls for less. I forgot about the less part.
Oh, the less part, yeah.
Middle position player plus one tanks for a minute and folds. But holds onto his cards, and the sigh calls for less. Yeah, we always like that crying call there. Thank you. We show our nut flush. Middle position player shows a deuce tray of diamonds. Middle position plus one who folded shows a jack 10 of diamonds. And the cutoff says he flopped his set. All right. So we called the cutoff hand pretty well.
Yeah.
It's a little shocking that they would call that river. I mean, now for less, it didn't say how much less, I guess. They started with 190. All right, so they must not have much left at all.
Yeah.
That's a good try. Really interesting that the middle position snap calls for the worst flush out there. Then we had that player that's, like I said, had jack of 10 diamonds, not the queen of diamonds, but pretty close to.
But folded.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, at that point, I mean, I think that's what I'm saying. You had to, so. It's interesting. You would have thought in this scenario that would have been the one caller, and that ends up being the one fold. And the other two lesser hands make the call to make this a good play nonetheless.
So then I wonder if the min raise works, because we were forgetting that the stacks were a lot smaller than ours for at least two of them. You know, one had like 280 and the other one had 190. So if you're thinking about that before you min raise, you might get that person to commit their... They're at 100 or whatever it is, rather than folding, because it's such a little amount versus if they...
Yeah, actually, I wish we would have done the math and figured out how much access in this pot, because that would be the answer to that story that you're telling here, so...
Yeah. Because the middle position plus one with the jack 10 of diamonds was the owner.
It is covered. He's the owner.
Yeah, it's covered, yeah.
He had the best hand out of the three, so...
So he made it 100, he might have called.
In theory, he's the reason that we bet the 305, because he's the one that's supposed to be calling.
Yeah.
And he's the one that folded.
So if we'd bet 100, we'd have got the rest of the other two's money, but then we would have gotten 100, maybe 100 out of the other guy.
We got 100 out.
Jeez. Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah. Huh.
It's funny when these hands go this way, because when I'm reading them with you, you know, I'm reading my notes and I'm thinking, oh, the diamond came. This is going to be a short hand. There's nothing really to talk about. But it ends up being one of the more interesting hands again because you're trying to get value out of it. It's not just how to play the cards and the streets and stuff. It's the value now. And there was a lot to think about there.
Certainly was.
That was crazy. All right, Paul, thanks for the hand. That's awesome.
Fantastic.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.